Located just outside New Straitsville, Ohio, deep in what was once Ohio's thriving mining industry, sits Robinson's Cave, a lonely opening in the mountainside. The acoustics are so good in this 1,000-square-foot cave that at one time you could whisper at one end and be heard at the other, an effect difficult to achieve these days as a mountain stream now pours into the cave at the top in a mini waterfall. There was no stream, though, in 1870, when Robinson's Cave served as a secret meeting place for miners to discuss organizing a union, and it is the birthplace, in America, of the labor movement. Even at this early stage, along with the labor movement, arrived singers of folk songs.
There was a young lady who lived at a mine, who married a mule driver and had a hell of a time. He would come home from his work all covered with mud to dirty the floors she had recently scrubbed. A hell of a time. He would put his arms round her in loving embrace and leave the black marks all over her face. He was a jolly good fellow and he loved his dear wife.
Then as now, the nearest city of any appreciable size to New Straitsville is Jackson, Ohio, which lies 50 miles due southeast, the seat of Jackson County. It was here, in Ohio's coal country, that singer, songwriter, and entertainer Frank Crummett was born on September 26, 1889. At the time Frank Crummett was born, Jackson had about 4,000 residents, 2 newspapers, 2 banks, and about 8 churches, and it is scarcely larger than that today. Crummett's father worked at one of the 2 banks in town, and his grandfather had been a doctor, so life in the mines would not have been a foregone conclusion for him. But what Frank Crummett loved to do was to entertain. He made his stage debut at the age of 5, performing in a minstrel troupe. Along the way, he picked up the banjo and the guitar and became expert on both. Later on, he would add ukulele. It is reasonable to conclude from his body of work that early on, Crummett was already well steeped in the familiar ballads and popular songs circulating throughout southern Ohio.
My grandfather said that of those he could hire, not a servant so faithful he found. For it wasted no time and had but one desire, at the close of each week to be wound. For it struck 24 when he entered at the door with a blushing and beautiful bride. But in stock, short, never to go again when the old man died.
About 1907, Frank's father was transferred to Cincinnati to manage a bank, and after a stint at Culver Military Academy in Indiana, the younger Crummett followed to study voice at the Cincinnati Conservatory. Frank was the student of Mrs. Margaret Johnson McAlpin, the daughter of a former Cincinnati mayor and widow of William McAlpin, who was the former manager of the McAlpin's department store on 4th Street. Mrs. McAlpin had been an opera singer before her marriage, and recitals featuring her students were covered in the local press. Some of Frank's other Cincinnati exploits were recorded in the papers back home as well, such as an article titled, "Jackson Boy Makes Hit." Frank Crummett, a Jackson boy who has numerous friends here, is running away with the applause at the Keith's Theater in Cincinnati. While he was not billed as the headliner this week, the Cincinnati papers are fulsome in praise of his act, which is called a one-man glee club. Mr. Crummett plays many instruments cleverly and sings old-time songs with great success. In 1910, we read, Mrs. McAlpin's pupil, Frank Crummett, has finally signed up with Henry W. Savage. He will sing the leading role in The Prince's Son, soon to be produced in New York. This production, which was an adaptation of a Franz Lehár operetta known in German as Das Fürstenkind, was advertised by Savage's agency as in development for the 1910-1911 season. This must have felt like the big time coming to Frank, as in 1910, Lehár's Merry Widow Waltz was on everybody's lips. But The Prince's Son never opened, and perhaps that was for the best, as Henry Savage was remembered by P.G. Wodehouse as a manipulative, exploitative, and stingy promoter that lived off his aspiring talent pool. Frank, for his part, was probably already too busy to do the role. In 1909, he had entered as a freshman to Ohio University in Athens to study electrical engineering while still continuing to report for his lessons with Mrs. McAlpin. It was with some irony that the one-man glee club was not permitted to join the OU glee club upon his enrollment. Crummett obtained his degree in 1912, and by 1913 he had left for New York, not to pursue work as an electrician, but as a singer. I would like to thank my wife Rebecca Lewis for unearthing a mountain of material relating to Frank's early years in Cincinnati. Some sources state that he unsuccessfully sought for a time an operatic career, but Rebecca's research makes clear that Crummett went straight into vaudeville, touring the U.S. and Canada with an act called the Three Collegians. Although billed sixth from the top in a review of a 1914 play he did in Philadelphia called The Queen of the Movies, Crummett received the lion's share of the show's accolades, with the reviewer stating, Frank Crummett did not crumb it. He was, in fact, buttered toast, served hot and crisp, and every portion was of the kind that made one want more. Despite such good notices, these were lean years for Frank, who worked up a solo vaudeville act with a novel instrument, the ukulele, and did his best to make a good impression. Frank's first hit was not something that he sang, but a song that he wrote. With the construction of the new football stadium at Ohio State University in Columbus in 1919, the OSU Buckeyes sponsored a contest for a new fight song that Frank entered, being a Buckeyes fan dating back to his days at OU. Frank won the contest and created a fight song much hated by my friends based in Michigan, but deeply loved by OSU fans throughout Ohio.
Ride
scarlet and gray. So to let them through that line, we've got to win this game today. Come on, Ohio, say through to victory. We'll cheer you as you go. Our honor depends, so we'll fight to the end for Ohio.
Handsome, personable, and extremely likable, Frank Crummett established himself as a workhorse performer, picking up whatever work he could. If he couldn't get a singing role in a show, he would play banjo in the pit orchestra. It was as a banjo player that Crummett caught the attention of saxophonist Paul Beasy, a specialist in a time when saxophones were rarely heard outside of the circus tent and in concert bands. Based in Chicago, Paul Beasy played a gold-plated sax with diamond-studded keys. Its dazzling effect inspired the young Bud Freeman to pick up the instrument. Beasy was present in the Columbia studio on December 11, 1919, when Frank made his recording debut, and may have asked Frank to join his trio then. The Beasy Trio records with Frank, especially Chili Bean, were huge sellers and established Frank Crummett's name with record buyers. But it was a slightly later record by this group that proved far more consequential to his career.
Johnny is out of Lolita, said he was going away, he's never coming home. He's on the way to Rome. Frankie, she begged and pleaded, cried, oh Johnny, please stay. He says, well, hon, I know the gun, you're wrong, but please don't go away. Then Johnny sighed, to make Frankie cried. Please, Mama, I'm going away, and I'm going to say, you're never coming home. You're gonna miss me, honey, in the days to come. When the wind winds again to blow, the ground is covered up. So you sing to me, you wish to be the crazy loving man. You're gonna miss me, honey, in the days to
Although some argue that the ballad itself is yet older, the familiar version of Frankie and Johnny was inspired by the 1899 St. Louis murder of Alan Britt by Frankie Baker, who grew jealous when Albert won a slow dancing contest with a prostitute named Alice Pryor, also known as Nellie Bly, not incidentally the news reporter of that era. Baker was subsequently tried and acquitted. Ballads about this story emerged almost immediately, with the first sheet music version appearing in 1904 under the title She Done Him Wrong, credited to Bill Bailey author Huey Cannon. The first recordings, however, did not appear until 1921, using a modified version published by the Leighton Brothers in 1912. Other recordings made in 1921 included versions by blues singer Edith Wilson and minstrel man Al Bernard, but Frank's was the earliest of these and became the hit. 1 month after this recording, Beasy and Frank Crummett parted company, and Frank continued as an exclusive artist for Columbia while also making anonymous Little Wonder discs on the side. Incidentally, Paul Beasy died in October 1925 at Good Samaritan Hospital here in Cincinnati at the age of 38. He was playing an extended engagement at Castle Farm at the time. Another key event from 1921 was Kermit's joining the cast of the show Tangerine opposite Julia Sanderson. Julia Sanderson was the product of an old show business family and an established star even in childhood. She was also married and had no need for the attentions of another actor who was like her, married. But Frank Kermit was apparently smitten and composed with David Zub the song Sweet Lady for her, which was then added to the Tangerine book. The song became a hit, and one might forgive Julia for caving in after Frank sung it to her in the show night after night.
Sweet lady, save a sweet smile for me. Sweet lady, in my dreams I used to be. Praying for a girlie just like you. Saying no one else would ever do. Sweet lady, may the sunbeams always shine for you, flowers blooming all the time. If you make it true, I'll not be grieving. Sweet lady, must we keep on make-believing?
Frank and Julia Sanderson formed a popular singing duo that appeared in Broadway revues throughout the 1920s, including the first production of No, No, Nanette, and in a revival of the Gershwin show, O.K. At first, their relationship was strictly professional, though that would change. In the meantime, Frank Kermit was an exclusive Columbia Records artist, but his acoustical Columbias didn't do his voice much justice. While it was easy to understand them, owing to his precise diction, no doubt learned in Cincinnati, the Columbia Records made his voice sound unnaturally high and reedy. Columbia ran into trouble in 1923 and declared bankruptcy, at which point its English subsidiary stepped in and took over. While some exclusives, like Ted Lewis and the newly signed Bessie Smith, renegotiated with the new owners and stayed, Frank Kermit seized this opportunity to move over to Victor, which welcomed him with open arms. In 1925, Victor switched to the electrical recording process, allowing Frank to put his banjo away and to play on records his first and favorite instrument, the guitar. Frank remade several of the successes that he'd had on Columbia, and while Kermit's 1921 Frankie and Johnny sold into the tens of thousands, his 1927 remake, with some new lyrics, sold hundreds of thousands of copies, possibly over time into the millions.
Frankie and Johnny were lovers. Oh, Lord, how they did love. They swore to be true to each other, just as true as the stars up above. He was her man. He wouldn't do her wrong. Frankie went down to the corner just for a bucket of beer. She said, Mr. Bartender, has my lovin' Johnny been here? He is my man. He wouldn't do me wrong. I don't want to cause you no trouble. I don't want to tell you no lie. But I saw your lover half an hour ago with a girl named Nellie Bly. He is your man, but he's doing you wrong. Frankie looked over the transom. There, to her great surprise, there on the couch sat Johnny, making love to Nellie Bly. He was her man. He was doing her wrong.
Frankie threw back her kimono, took out a little 44. Rudy tutu, three times she shot right through that hardwood door. She shot her man, cause it done her wrong. Roll me over easy, roll me over slow. Roll me over on the left side, cause your bullets hurt me so. I was your man, and I done you wrong. Bring out your rubber-tied hearses, bring out your rubber-tied hack. I'm taking my man to the graveyard, and ain't going to bring him back. He was my man, and he done me wrong. Bring round 1,000 policemen, bring 'em round today, to lock me in that dungeon cell and throw the key away. I shot my man, cause it done me wrong. Frankie, she said to the warden, what are they going to do? The warden, he said to Frankie, is the electric chair for you. You shot your man, though he done you wrong. The sheriff came round in the morning, said it was all for the best. He said her lover, Johnny, was nothing but a doggone pest. He was her man, but he'd done her wrong. This story has no moral, this story has no end. This story only goes to show that there ain't no good in men. He was her man, and he'd done her wrong.
While it was typical for the Victor studio musicians to dress up Frank's recordings with extra instruments, on the flip of Frankie and Johnny, Frank was permitted to use just his guitar as accompaniment. Country and blues singers, relatively new to records in 1927, had already been doing this, but for a pop singer, this was a new sound.
One day this bold Russian had shouldered his gun and donned his most truculent sneer. Downtown he did go, where he trod on the toe of Abdul Bulbul Amir. Young man, quoth Abdul, has life grown so dull that you wish to end your career? Vile infidel, no, you have trod on the toe of Abdul Bulbul Amir. Said Ivan, my friend, your remarks in the end will avail you but little, I fear. For you ne'er will survive to repeat them alive, Mr. Abdul Bulbul Amir. So take your last look at sunshine and brook and send your regrets to the Tsar. For by this I imply you are going to die, Count Ivan Skavinsky Skavar.
Frank Crummett was one of the major vocalists appearing on popular records in the last half of the 1920s and had many hits, one right after the other. Frank recorded some Tin Pan Alley perennials, but also waxed humorous novelty songs and folk-styled material, a good bit of which he composed himself. By the end of his career, Frank Crummett had filed more than 60 copyrights on songs he had written or revised from pre-existing sources. This is a little montage of some of the best remembered ones.
I am a gay caballero, coming from Rio de Janeiro, with nice oily hair and full of hot air. I'm an expert at shooting the bullo. I'm seeking a fair señorita, not thin and yet not too much meata. I'll woo her a while in my Argentine style. I'll carry her off of her feeta. Nowadays we often gaze
plays on women over 50 without the slightest trace of wrinkles on their face. Doctors go and take their dough to make them young and nifty, but doctors I defy to tell me just why. No matter how young a prune may be, it's always full of wrinkles. We may get them on our face, prunes get them every place. Prohibition worries us, but prunes don't sit and brood. For no matter how young a prune may be, it's always getting stewed. On a stormy night, it's my delight to mix a glass of grog and then get Jack to spin the yarn before the burning log. And after you've been listening to all that he has said, you feel so frightened that you cannot go alone to bed. Jack is every inch a sailor, 5 and 20 years a whaler. Jack is every inch a sailor, born upon the bright blue sea. Lots of folks are worried over how they'll pay the rent, and some folks are annoyed because they can't lay up a cent. Others are perplexed about the latest picture show, but there is really only just one thing I'd like to know. What kind of a noise annoys an oyster? No matter what I do, the answer won't come through. What kind of a noise annoys an oyster? That's a question I would like an answer to. A little piece of cheese annoys a mouse, there is no doubt, but here's the one thing I've been trying hard to figure out. What kind of a noise annoys an oyster when an oyster's in a stew?
Then we sang, it's all fair weather when good fellas get together, till a lady passing by was heard to say, she says, you can tell a man who boozes by the company he chooses. And the pig got up and slowly walked away. Yes, the pig got up and slowly walked away. Slowly walked away. Slowly walked away. Yes, the pig got up and he turned and winked at me as he slowly walked away.
In 1927, Frank Crummett proposed marriage to Julia Sanderson, who reluctantly accepted. While not delighted that she was being dumped, Frank's wife granted him his freedom without much opposition. Not so Julia, who had gone through a nasty, very public divorce from jockey Ted Sloan in 1913 and was about to experience another. Even as his hit Victor records whirled happily on the phonographs of people throughout the land, Frank was opening his morning papers to read the next installment of Julia's name being dragged through the mud. Then there came a day when it was all over and Julia's divorce was granted. Frank and Julia married in a quiet ceremony and settled at an impressive estate called Dunroven, located in Longmeadow, Massachusetts. While they continued to perform, made 3 musical film shorts, all of which are lost, and Frank kept right on making records. Privately, the Crummetts were trying to find a way out of show business that would still allow them to make the mortgage at Dunroven. Unfolding events slammed the gate shut on that aspiration.
The market simply goes to prove that we still have loco weeds. For the bull buys what he doesn't want, and the bear sells what he needs. I bought an elevator stock and thought that I'd done well.
Then the little bears all ran downstairs and rang the basement bell. And here is the song I heard the whole day long. Oh, the market's not so good today. Your stocks look kinda sick. In fact, they all drop down a point each time the tickers tick. We'll have to have more margin now. There isn't any doubt. So you better dash with a load of cash or we'll have to sell you out.
A Tale of the Ticker, written by Frank, was recorded on September 30th, 1929, exactly 1 month before Black Tuesday, the day the stock market crashed and plunged America into the Great Depression. Thankfully, the Crummets were not out of options. Late in 1929, they were approached by Blackstone Cigars to host a radio program, Blackstone Plantation, starting on CBS and later moving to NBC. Over the next 13 years, the Crummets became regular fixtures on radio, both together and separately, working with various sponsors, shows, and networks, to the extent that their involvement in radio became continuous in these years. One of the shows that Frank hosted alone, but on which Julia occasionally appeared as a guest, was Comedy Stars on Broadway.
Comedy Stars of Broadway. Presented by Alka-Seltzer. For the next 15 minutes, you will be regaled with mirth and music presented by your host, that debonair, dapper, delightful Frank Crummett with his Broadway band. Frank brings you as his distinguished guest, Teddy Bergman, radio's famous character comedian. But here he is in person. Let him speak for himself.
Good friend, some weeks ago, Teddy Bergman brought to life on this program his latest creation, that wild Latin from Manhattan, Tony Baloney. And Tony became an instantaneous success, so right now, by popular request, Tony Baloney rides again. Our scene is the Bon Voyage Travel Bureau. John Brown is the clerk. Enter Teddy Bergman as Tony Baloney.
You're going to drive me crazy. I want to go to Italy.
All right, sir. What class would you like to travel?
Please, I'm not going to travel in a class. Tony Baloney, he's in no bigger shoots.
You misunderstand me. When I say class, I don't mean class.
When you say class, you don't mean class?
That's right.
What's right?
What you just said.
What I'm saying?
When I say class, I don't mean class.
Then you dumb clock, what do you mean?
I mean, how much do you want to spend?
Then why you don't say so?
I just said so.
All right, don't get excited. Don't get red in the face. Look at me, I'm no excited. I'm being a come and a collect.
This episode featured the comedy team of John Brown and Teddy Bergman. Bergman later changed his name to Alan Reed and became the voice of Fred Flintstone. Few to almost none of the shows, hosted jointly by Frank and Julia, still remain. From a recently discovered transcription, here's part of a show that they did in 1940.
The joy that surrounds us, the love all around us.
I'm thankful to you, sweetheart, for the dreams I once knew, dear, that you made come true, dear. I'm thankful to you, sweetheart.
Oh, don't stop to knock, folks. Come on right in. That awkward little Crummett boy is happy to see you, and that graceful little Sanderson girl is bubbling over with pretty songs, and that enriched Occident flower is the best ever.
To be envied by others as two perfect lovers, I'm thankful to you, sweetheart.
Hello, everybody, and Frankie, you certainly told the truth when you called yourself that awkward Crummett boy.
Oh, now, Duty, I'm not that.
I never saw you knocking so many things over and making so much noise before we started our visit today.
Well, gosh almighty, did you see the big thing I was bringing into the living room here?
How could I miss it? Almost as big as the side of our garage. What in heaven's name is it, Frankie?
Well, now, that, Mrs. C., is the result of many weeks of hard work with the paint and the brush.
What? You an artist, Frankie? And I never knew...
Well, now, wait a minute here. I'll hold it up so you can see. Wait a minute. Oh, it's heavy. There, now. You see, you are now gazing on a portrait of your own sweet self standing in the kitchen doorway.
Frankie, there. I can see the kitchen doorway, but where am I?
Well, you see, Duty, it took me so long to paint the doorway that in the meantime you had gone back into the kitchen, you see, to stir up a batch of cookies.
Oh, fine thing. It's just the way you do things around here. I'm getting
now,
so...
Listen, Duty, really, please, that's no mood to be for...
We have the radio excerpts thanks to David Lennick, a Canadian radio producer and transfer engineer who has done more to conserve the recorded legacy of Frank Crummett than any other person in the 21st century. As soon as he became a star on radio, the popularity of Frank's phonograph records began to diminish, except in England, where his status remained unchanged. By the time his Victor contract ran out towards the end of 1933, Victor was releasing his new records only in England, though they continued to market some of his older titles in product lines aimed at rural consumers into the 1940s. In 1934, Frank joined the roster of the newly formed Decca Company. Although sales of these records did not match what he'd achieved in the 1920s, he recorded with Decca up through 1938. He may have stopped at this point deliberately, as in the 18 years leading up to that date, Frank Crummett made more than 350 recordings. Perhaps Crummett felt that that was enough. Today, more than half of them may be found on the Internet Archive. To make their radio engagements, Frank and Julia had to travel by car to New York City from Dunrovin, a four-hour drive round trip, at least twice a week. They didn't mind the drive. They liked each other's company, and as old vaudevillians, both were well accustomed to the rigors of the road. However, on September 7th, 1943, Frank Crummett slumped over in his seat and suffered a massive heart attack. He died shortly after checking into a hospital in Manhattan. Frank Crummett was 3 weeks short of his 54th birthday. Julia Sanderson attempted to continue on radio, hosting a women's talk show, but by 1945, she finally retired from show business, as she'd wanted to do in the 1920s, and lived in seclusion at Dunrovin in the 30 years left to her. Frank Crummett isn't wholly forgotten, but his achievements are difficult to measure using a 21st century yardstick, and his connection to Cincinnati remains virtually unrecognized. Experts aren't sure where to place Crummett's efforts in folk music, anticipating, as they do, the folk revival of the post-war period by two decades. Some among the folk revival did know his work. Skiffle King Lonnie Donegan's 1961 version of Frankie and Johnny follows Frank Crummett's almost exactly. However, within its own context, Frank Crummett's contribution to popular culture was enormous. He paved the way for a more relaxed singing style than Al Jolson's, and subtly drew into pop music vernacular material into a sort of parody with more typical Tin Pan Alley song. His witty songs reflect the college humor popular in the 1920s. Beyond that, Frank Crummett was a superstar, just as important to the Roaring Twenties as Doris Day or Rosemary Clooney were to the years following World War II, one of the biggest stars ever to start his career in Cincinnati. For the Blues, I'm Dave Lewis.